From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Millions of pupils returned to schools in the UK Monday as COVID lockdown restrictions began to ease amid continuing uncertainty surrounding the COVID testing regime for students and mask wearing in classrooms. According to one news report, after 2 months of remote learning locked away from their friends, there was jubilation and trepidation among the returning students. Many of the secondary schools will not reopen until next week as the testing of pupils gets underway. For more on this, we go to a press conference that took place on Monday in the UK with Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
Good afternoon and thank you for joining us. This has been a big day and an emotional day for millions of families up and down the country as children see and play with their friends at school for the first time in months. And although I know that some will have been anxious, as pupils always are, on the first day of term, I also know that the overwhelming feeling is one of relief. And we all know that the education of our children is so important that the greater risk now is keeping them out of school for a day longer. I want to thank all the teachers who've got their schools ready and who've been teaching throughout the whole period, whether that's remotely or in person. Your work has been astonishing. And I want to thank the parents and all those who've been teaching at home, who've had to master Zoom, who've had to communicate every detail of the syllabus from fronted adverbials to quadratic equations. And we all know that the burden has disproportionately fallen on women, often holding down jobs and providing childcare at the same time. So our job now as government is to build on your efforts so that from now on our school children not only catch up on lost learning, but take the biggest possible step forwards with a concerted national programme for educational recovery. It's thanks to all of you, parents, teachers, pupils, thanks to this huge national effort to keep kids at home, that we have been able significantly to reduce the spread of the virus. And so today we've been able to take that crucial first step on what we hope is our cautious but irreversible roadmap to freedom. Today, allowing people to meet one-on-one outside for the first time in months, allowing care home visits to take place with all appropriate precautions. And this first step on the roadmap is made possible above all by our NHS, which has now vaccinated more than one-third of the entire UK population. We take this step with confidence because all four of the most vulnerable groups have not only been vaccinated in overwhelming numbers, but it's now 3 weeks since they've, or at least 3 weeks, since they've received their first dose, so that they'll be feeling the full benefits of the vaccine's protection. We will continue on this roadmap, but we must remember that today's return to schools will of course have an impact on the spread of the virus. And so at all times, and as we decide on the next steps forward and when we take them, we will be driven by the data. And with the number of patients being admitted to hospital with COVID each day still around eight times higher than the lows of last summer, it's more vital than ever to follow the rules. Hands, face, space, and please continue to stay at home, protect the NHS, and save lives. Thank you very much. I'm now going to hand over to Jenny to do the slides.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Could I have the first slide, please? So what we can see here is a pleasing picture, but one which I think still has some caution attached to it. This shows the number of people testing positive, both by PCR and LFD test for COVID-19. And the recent seven-day average, you can see, is 5,889. Now, that case rate is still falling. It's below now 100 per 100,000 in every region across the country, but it's not uniformly across the country. So it's really important that we continue to practice social distancing, hand space and space, as the Prime Minister has said, and continue to observe all of our hand washing as well. You can see that the rate is back now about where it was in the end of September. So still quite a high level. This is a level at which a new wave could easily take off again from, and we need to persist with all of those actions. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the number of people in hospital with COVID-19 in the UK. That dotted line across the middle shows what the first peak was in about 21,000 on the 12th of April, and then the real height that it climbed to over the new year. Again, it's back down to around 10,000, but this is still a substantial strain on the NHS and not one that we can afford to rise from again with any further pandemic waves. So we're still, you can see that there is a lag, as we'd expect, in the case numbers, and then that appearing in our hospital rates. So a good sign, but still some way to go. Next slide, please. And the third slide we have here shows the number of deaths, sadly, of people who had a positive test result and then died within 28 days of that first test. This is reported up to the 8th of March, and again, it's really good to be able to see that the average rate, 7-day rate, is now down to 206 deaths. We can see those characteristic reporting blips at the weekend where the rate's lower, which is why we have that rolling average. And you can see now that, again, this is falling right down. The really good news here is that as the vaccine starts to have effect in the older people who've been vaccinated first and are most vulnerable, that the impact on the number of deaths is starting to come down more rapidly than some of the other indicators. And one more slide, I think, please. And what we have here is a number of people who've received a vaccination for COVID-19. So huge numbers and extremely fast progress, thanks to colleagues, particularly in the NHS, but right around the country in local authorities and volunteers. The bluey-purple line is those who've received their first dose. But if you look at the bottom of the slide, you can see an orange line starting to rise up. And these are individuals who've now come to the 12-week period and have had their second dose as well. So these are each individual counted. We're now heading up to 24 million on this, and I think when we get a little bit further, we'll be heading right up towards 50% of our population. So really good news, but while we're understanding what the effect of vaccine is on transmission, we anticipate this will have really good impact on protecting individuals from serious illness, but we still need to watch and wait to see what's happening. So again, the strong message is keep practicing those social distancing measures. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jenny. Let's go to Arjun from Watford.
Young people have been hit very hard as a result of the pandemic. However, the government has seemed to put us at the bottom of the priority list. What is the government doing to ensure that young people will be catered for in terms of support for both now and the after effects of when the pandemic is over?
Arjun, thank you very much. The most important thing that we're able to do today is to get young people back into school. Obviously, for all those who are of school age, that makes a massive difference. I think that will is something that is going to be a really, really welcome to families up and down the country. But for those young people who are thinking about jobs, who are thinking about their futures, clearly we want to give you the maximum possible help, and that's why we have the Kickstart funds, £2 billion to help young people, specifically the 18 to 24 year old group, Arjun, into work, and to make sure that we support businesses now with special packages to enable them to take on young people. This is going to be, it's going to continue to be a tough time for the country, but I'm confident that we'll be able to get through it very well and start to have a real jobs-led recovery. But for now, we've got to continue to beat the pandemic. Arjun, that's not in any way to underestimate the pressure young people have been under. I do understand how tough it has been, obviously, particularly for university students who haven't had anything like the university experience that they would have liked. but the faster we can get through it and the more we can observe the guidance, as Jenny has said, working together, we'll be able to continue on the cautious but irreversible roadmap and give young people the freedom that they need. Let's go to Phoebe from Leeds.
I've been hearing a lot about vaccine passports to allow British tourists to travel again, but I'm just wondering how this is going to work for under-16s. I can imagine this is a question on a lot of people's minds, and we're all just so eager to start booking our holidays again.
Yeah. Phoebe, a really excellent question about vaccine passports and how they'd work for under-16s. We're looking at the way these types of vaccination certificates might work. They do raise all sorts of issues for those who, like under 16-year-olds, who might not have had a vaccination for one reason or another. Though those who aren't medically able to get a vaccination, for instance, there are some complexities. We're looking at what they're thinking of in other countries, and we'll be making sure we report back to you as soon as we to everybody as soon as we possibly can. As you may know, work is being done by Michael Gove, the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, on that whole issue. It's a novel one for our country. We've never had this type of question before within the domestic UK economy, within our own home market. Though clearly, vaccine passports as an idea are not new when it comes to international travel. There have been certificates for things like yellow fever and other diseases in the past, and I'm sure that will be a feature of our life in the future. Ben Wright of the BBC.
Thank you. A question to both of you first. Now that schools in England have reopened, do you accept that infection rate levels will go up? And what would be an acceptable level? And a second question to the Prime Minister, please. In their interview, Harry and Meghan claim the royal family failed to look after their mental health, and that an unnamed member of the family asked how dark their son Archie's skin might be. What did you think when you heard those comments? And should Buckingham Palace investigate the allegations?
Ben, thank you very much. Look, on your second question, perhaps the best thing I can say is that I've always had the highest admiration for the Queen and the unifying role that she plays in our country and across the Commonwealth. And as for the rest, all other matters to do with the royal family, I've spent a long time now not commenting on royal family matters, and I don't intend to depart from that today. And on your question about, you know, the budget of risk involved in opening up schools, which I actually referred to earlier on, we do accept, I think, Jenny, that of course there will be a risk of increased transmission. That's inevitable if you open up schools for millions of kids across the country. That is going to happen. But we think that we can do it now in the way that we are because we have the proportion of the population vaccinated that I described, the groups 1 to 4, and now having had the immunity bedded in after at least 3 weeks, and we think it is prudent to be able to do so. But as I said to earlier on, we will continue to be driven by data and not dates. And as we approach the next steps, April the 12th, May the 17th, June the 21st, we will continue to assess where we've got to. The data on the vaccinations and the impact that they're having is very encouraging, but we have to remain very, very cautious. Anything you want to add on that, Jenny?
Well, exactly as the Prime Minister said, we do expect there to be an impact on R, and I think people will probably have seen some of the Sage comments on that. But clearly, education is of critical public health importance, just as much as COVID is. And so what we do know is, or at least we can't disentangle, the social interaction element of that rise in R. So it's just as likely it's people meeting at school gates or the different numbers of social interactions as much as it is in schools. So I think the critical point is there are new interventions, so the testing for schools is in place, starting from now and gradually for some senior pupils going forward. What that's likely to do is diminish the number of community transmission cases which could come into schools. So schools will be inherently safer places, but equally it will reach back into families. So although I suspect we may see a rise at the start, with luck as we go forward and people get used to using that testing, whole families will be protected as well. And the whole issue about vaccination, of course, is we have now protected the most vulnerable individuals as we come down the age groups and into those with underlying health conditions. And so the impact on our hospitals going forward is likely to be significantly less.
Thank you. Robert Peston, ITV.
Good afternoon, Prime Minister Jenny Harris. Prime Minister, is this the moment to spend £200,000 on the refurbishment of your Downing Street flat? And have any of the bills been settled by the Conservative Party or private donors? And with the vaccination programme being significantly accelerated since you prepared your road to releasing the lockdown measures, won't you consider speeding up the release of lockdown measures?
Well, thank you very much, Robert. And on your first point, all I can say is all such inquiries will be answered with the normal declarations in the normal way. And on your second question about accelerating the timetable and the roadmap, people have asked us to do this many times, and of course I understand the urgency that people feel, but we have to be driven by the data. We have to look at the rates of infection. Don't forget they're still very high by the standards of last year. We still have thousands of people in hospital with COVID, and we've seen alas in other European countries that the curve is going up again. And we remember, frankly, what happened every time we've seen those upward curves in our friends and neighbours, that it's not too long after that we see an increase in this country as well. And so we just got to remain prudent. And the whole point about this roadmap, Robert, is it's intended to be cautious but irreversible. And we think we can do that because of the success of the vaccine rollout that you rightly describe. But I think people would really rather trade some urgency and some haste in favour of security and certainty about those dates that we've set out: April the 12th, May the 17th, June the 21st, and so on. Thanks, Robert. Ben Kentish of LBC.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Two questions for you, if I may. Firstly, a couple of weeks ago on the issue of financial support for people who are having to self-isolate, you said we'd hear more from the Chancellor last week. We didn't hear any more on that. It's something that your scientific advisers have called for repeatedly, that the head of Test and Trace has said suggested is necessary. Will we hear more on that issue, or do you think those advisers are wrong on that? And secondly, if I could just follow up on Robert's question, you said that the roadmap would be guided by the data. At the moment, it's guided by data that is overly pessimistic. We know the vaccine rollout's been better. Vaccines are more effective. The number of people in hospital is at the lower end of what was predicted in those models. If it is truly guided by data, will it be assessed at regular intervals to make sure that we're not prolonging the resumption of normality and the economic damage that goes with that than longer than the science says is necessary? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ben. What we're doing, in addition to help people to self-isolate, in addition to the £500 support and all the rest of it, is giving money particularly to councils. I have a figure of £170 million more in my head to support them, to help them give people who really need it to self-isolate, and that's possibly what I was referring to last time that we talked. And on your question about being driven by the data and the data now being positive, I accept that, and I agree that there are some encouraging signs, but the whole point is, you know, we remember where we were last summer. We had the disease down to levels much below where it is today, and then we saw what happened with the spike. And I think it's fantastic that the vaccine rollout is proving so successful, but don't forget that there is a big budget of risk involved in opening schools today in the way that that we are. That's just inevitable. And you heard what Jenny had to say about the effect on the R. We think it's manageable. We think it's right. We think we're prudent to be doing what we are. As I say, I think the biggest risk is not opening schools now, but we'll continue to take a cautious and prudent approach, because I think that is really what I think business, British business, would really rather see: a cautious and irreversible approach rather than a hasty approach that we have to reverse.
Shall I just adding to that, I think perhaps what people are not always aware of is the proportion of the population who are still left. Even though we have a brilliant vaccination programme rolling out, there will still be a large proportion of the population left who could become infected in the future. So we clearly need to push the vaccination programme right out. We have to keep looking for new variants. That's another important element as to why we need to wait and check. And we are actually in the UK doing more genomics than anywhere else in the world, and that's an important area to look at but keep observing. And then we need that time period. There's a 2 week to illness and a 2 week to hospitalisation, so that 4 to 5 week assessment period is absolutely critical to know that the intervention that has gone in and the result are linked, not to have multiple interventions and then be confused at what we've actually managed to achieve.
Thanks a lot. To Harry Cole, The Sun.
Thank you, Prime Minister. A question for Dr. Harries. Education unions have said this morning they can foresee schools reclosing at some point again. Do you foresee that happening? And a question for the Prime Minister. The world's media is wall to wall with accusations of Britain as an unwelcoming and racist country today. Has that damaged this nation? And do you believe that the royal family, Queen aside, is racist?
I'll start with the education question. So the answer, short answer, is hopefully not, because our children's education is so critical, which is why it's schools that have opened first. We had a question early on just highlighting, I think, how young people have been affected through the pandemic. So I would certainly not want that to happen. But I think we can be very optimistic going forward. We, for all of the reasons I've said earlier around our vaccination programmes and the surveillance that we have in operation, the testing programme in schools should mean that the likelihood of a case going into the school and then numbers of children having to come out of education to isolate should be very significantly reduced. Now, there may be, and I'll just do a forewarning here, there may be a very short period at the start of this programme where everybody gets used to it and a larger number of children come out of school, and then it will settle down. So I think it's really important that when observing this, people think through the next 3 to 4 weeks, not the first 1 to 2.
Harry, on your other point, look, I congratulate you on your very determined attempt to involve me in this story more than I've said already. But I really think that when it comes to matters to do with the royal family, the right thing for prime ministers to say is nothing, and nothing is the thing that I propose to say today about that particular matter. Thank you very much. Let's go to Dominic Yateman of the Metro.
Hi, thank you, Prime Minister. Your education secretary yesterday promised the biggest shake-up since the war, with longer school days and a five-term year among the measures suggested in a bid to help children catch up on their missed education. When can parents and teachers expect to see these plans? And secondly, if I may, is £3.50 a week extra an appropriate reward for the nurses who are steering Britain out of this pandemic?
Dominic, first of all, on your point about, I'll come to the education recovery plan, but on your point about nurses, I would stress that, well, first of all, the gratitude that I think everybody feels for towards the nursing profession and all health and social care workers. One of the most important things that nurses tell me they want to see is more nurses to help them on the wards, to help them cope with the pandemic and everything else. And there are 10,000 more now this year than there were last year, and that's a good thing. There's also a big increase in recruitment, by the way. I think it's up something like 36%. And I understand, of course, that the whole sector has been under massive pressure, and that's why we are investing colossally on top of the £140 billion annually that we give to the NHS, but an extra £62 billion to support the NHS, and above all to help boost that recruitment drive that I think is really crucial for the well-being of nurses across the country, in addition to the, of course, to the 12.8% pay increase that they got the most recent round. So that's where we are, Dominic, on that. And on your excellent question about the school's recovery plan, I would echo what the Secretary of State for Education said. This is a huge moment. We have to recognise that parents up and down the country, teachers, have been coping with absolutely exceptional circumstances. Some pupils have had differential loss of learning. They've, for one reason or another, they've been more disadvantaged by the pandemic than others. We have to make up that lost learning. We have to be very creative and very direct in the way that we do it. So one of the things that we're looking at, and that Sir Kevin Collins, the Education Recovery Commissioner, is looking at, is tutoring and what you can do to make a difference one-on-one with pupils. And that might apply to kids who have fallen behind, or kids who just need their potential unleashed in all sorts of ways. We're also looking, as we've said, at the whole curriculum, making sure that we do as much as we can to give kids the opportunities that they need. So a lot of work is going to be done on this. And as I said, I think at one of these press conferences recently, I think that actually it is our biggest national challenge. Yes, we've got to defeat the backlog in the NHS, in the courts, all the problems that have built up, that have silted up as a result of COVID. But I think the biggest challenge now is remediating the damage done to the education of kids and young people in this country. I know we can do it. I absolutely know we can do it, but it's going to take a lot of focus and a lot of drive. And that's why we've appointed Sir Kevin and his team. OK, Andrew Woodcock, The Independent.
Good afternoon. Dr. Harris, if I could ask you first, we're hearing reports of fairly large numbers of parents failing to give permission for their children to be tested when they return to school. What I'd like to ask is, are those children undermining the safety of their classmates when they're together in the classroom? Should they be kept separate from their classmates? And Prime Minister, if I may follow some of my colleagues in straying off the subject of the coronavirus for a second, you are currently threatening for the second time to unilaterally breach terms of the Northern Ireland Protocol, which you negotiated and you signed as part of your Brexit deal. And we hear that you may be planning to do the same thing with regards to imports from the EU to mainland Britain. You said at the time of the deal that it was a great deal. You said that there were no non-tariff barriers. You told Northern Irish businessmen that they could throw any customs forms in the bin. And yet yesterday, Lord Frost, your minister, wrote that at the time of the negotiations, that it was clear that there was no world in which the EU would eliminate trade barriers. Isn't it time now for you to come clean with voters and admit that all of these problems are not teething problems, but that the trade barriers and the damage which they cause are part and parcel of your Brexit deal?
The school testing response. So I think the first important thing to say is children should always be allowed to come into school. It's their right to have an education, and it's important for their long-term health and actually their future families' health. So that, I think, is the first point. I do recognise that for many parents it's quite an unusual ask for, before children go off to school to do a swab and a test. It will take time, I think, for families to get used to that. And one of the reasons that the testing has been put in a phased way so that children have three tests in school in a supervised way with support so that they know what to expect. And my experience was once the child knows what they want to do. Actually, as a parent, you had less control over it. They actually saw what the benefits were and were not frightened of it. I know that many of the testing centres are offering opportunities for parents and for families to get used to the testing or to seek any help. And I think with time, I'm sure families will give their permission and will adopt it.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.